This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
Hey, and welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. At iFanboy.com, we like comics. We read comics. And every week, we pick one comic and we write about it. And then we talk about it on this here podcast. My name is Ron, and I'm here with Connor.
Hello.
And unfortunately, Josh, who is normally with us, could not be with us this week. So me and Connor are going to try to make it on our own.
We're in trouble.
I know we are. We're doomed. There will be no humor whatsoever. so Connor had the pick of the week this week. So Connor, what did you pick?
Well, my pick of the week this week was Ultimate X-Men number 66. But I want to back it up for a second because back it up. Last week you had the pick of the week, and it was a really really slow week for you.
Yes.
This week I only had 4 comic books to choose from.
Wow.
And I spent $10.49.
Well, even though it's sad because there's not a lot of comic books, doesn't that feel great?
It feels pretty good, but at the same time, there's a lot of pressure put on those 4 comic books, especially when it's your week to do the pick.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, one of these better be good or I'm in big trouble. Because there's nothing harder than writing a pick of the week for a book that's just not that good.
Right.
But Ultimate X-Men was pretty good. It wasn't great, but it was pretty good.
It was the best of the lot?
Yeah, the best of the lot. The other ones were not that good. Captain Atom and Green Arrow and Justice League.
I think I got Captain Atom as well, and not to go away from your pick, but I it's not as fantastic as the first issue, but I think it's building. I think
it's still
the quality is consistent.
Yeah, it's solid. I think you could have a pick on your hands the next couple of issues.
Yeah, like when it starts getting crescendo.
It's a 9-issue miniseries. I didn't even
realize
that.
Which is an odd number.
That's kind of random. So, anyway, Robert Kirkman, who we love to death on the website and on the podcast. He's the new Bendis. He is the new Bendis, and he's the new writer at Ultimate X-Men, taking over for Brian Vaughn, who we also love. So that's a really strong 1-2 punch, sort of burying the memory of Mark Millar, who's really fallen from everyone's graces, I think. I find the book, I know you don't like it as much because you're more of a traditionalist X-Men.
Well, no, I've it's grown on me the past 40 issues or so.
Right, but I feel like now, since the last 2 writers have been on, it's a much more fun book than it was previously.
Yeah,
and I'm really enjoying reading it. And Kirkman, I think, did a really good job. He did what was traditionally known as the date issue. I think Ron knows what I'm talking about. We always talk about how much we used to really like the one-shot issues in between the major storylines, where everybody would get to decompress and have a little bit of a social life, go out on dates, and the X-Men would play baseball, which runs like.
Yeah, I love the baseball issues, the classic Claremont baseball issue.
Right, so this is in that vein where, after all the trials and tribulations the X-Men have gone through in this issue, everybody sort of heads out for the town, goes on dates, just goes to dinner, does normal social things outside the costume, and it was just fun to go along with everybody's social life, especially in the Ultimate Universe. We haven't really seen much of that.
Right. It kind of adds more personal dimension to
the
character.
That was always the great thing about the old issues that were like that, was it added a depth to the characters that wasn't there before. Although,
well, yeah, I think that's a staple of the both the X-Men books as being kind of like a family book, and just the Marvel books in general being a bit more personal.
Yeah, well, I mean, DC books did it too, more, not as much as Marvel books, certainly. I'm not going to claim they did, but
right, but they DC does it in costume.
Not really.
Well, yeah, the Titans, they sit around in their costumes and they're real people, but they you know, like, it's, I don't know. You probably know better than I do. That's the impression I get.
Well, yeah, no, yeah. Marvel definitely did it more often, and they. Yeah. It was definitely more of a Marvel thing. But this is different in that it's not a standalone issue. It's actually a story arc.
Yeah.
So now the question is, where is it going to go?
Right.
Which, you know, it could go in a bad way. It could go in a good way. but I had a lot of fun, and it was a nice read. And my question for you is this the first time we've seen Ultimate Sabretooth?
I want to say yes, but I could be wrong. I don't know Ultimate continuity as well as I know X-Men continuity. I mean, I know it.
Issues.
Well, the problem is in 66 issues they have thrown up a lot of characters, and between you know, Magneto's Brotherhood and all the various, you know, Weapon X and all the, you know, kind of stuff like that, he very well could have been in an issue, and I just don't remember.
I think that's one of the biggest problems with the Ultimate Universe, which I like, is that they just throw so much at you. You really don't have time to get to know anybody because there's always moving on to the next. Oh, now there's Ultimate Gambit, and you're just like, oh, slow down.
I just quickly looked, and he has been introduced before. Yeah, because I just saw a forum post and somebody said the return of Ultimate Sabretooth.
Oh, okay. Well,
so
there you go.
And that was a month ago. So he was probably around early in the issues and stuff like that. So
although
it is interesting though, because he did die in that him and Wolverine fought and Wolverine took care of him. And he was decapitated, which is kind of an interesting question because
if you look closely at Sabretooth, he's got a really nasty-looking scar on his neck.
Well, there you go. But it's funny because if you remember back in the... He does have a nasty-looking scar on his neck. If you remember back to when the Ultimates line kind of launched and they lauded their whole, you know, no resurrections. When people die, they die.
Oh, they did say that?
Yeah, they did. So.
Well, I guess the exception to the rule would be the mutants that can heal themselves.
Right. Well, the thing is, I mean, somebody who is as great as Sabretooth... You know, a great, you know, foil for Wolverine. You can't just, you know, kill him in his first.
We're not,
you know,
counting the Sabretooth from the films, are we?
No, we can't. Oh, no, it's embarrassing. But yet another reason why that's the thing about the films. I know a couple of weeks ago, if you go to ifanboy.com and check out some of the articles, we were talking about the X-Men movies and the casting that's been going on for it. And there are little things in the movies that don't jive with the comics, such as Sabretooth being a mute.
Well,
because they cast a wrestler. And,
yeah, that was a bad move.
Yeah, so, I mean, those are the little things that kind of grate at me as an X-Men fan. So.
And they also, so this book is setting stuff up, obviously, because Charles Xavier is having a dinner date with the woman from the Shi'ar.
Which I'm very surprised. I didn't expect that at all.
So that's coming up, obviously, somehow.
I thought that's a really cool, how they introduced her is really kind of a cool approach.
Yeah. Well, there are definitely some innovations that the Ultimate Universe has come up with.
Yeah, well, because, I mean, for those who don't read the X-Men books, Leandra, whatever her name is, I can never pronounce these names.
They all sound right in your head.
Yeah, she's the leader of the Shi'ar, who is a, in the normal Marvel Universe, is an alien race out in space. But in this issue, they introduce her, and she's the leader of a religious organization on Earth. And so, so now it's kind of like, are they going to keep her as a human, or do we know that she's an alien because we read the X-Men books? So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with that.
And I have to say that I'm really happy that they've kept up the Spider-Man-Kitty Pryde relationship, which I was convinced and even mentioned it in the pick of the week that they weren't, that it was going to be a one-time deal. And they've actually kept it going in both the Ultimate Spider-Man and Ultimate X-Men books, and I really enjoy like that.
I think it's genius. It's great.
Yeah.
I mean, it helps both characters so much.
And it seems to be a natural fit for some reason. It's never been explored before, obviously, because Peter Parker's 30 years old in his book now or whatever he is. But
plus, Kitty Pryde's always been hot.
What the hell, yeah.
I just said a comic book character's hot.
Underage.
If Josh was here, he would just tear me apart.
But I had fun. I don't know. Did you like it?
Yeah, no, I did like it. I mean, the thing is that I didn't think it was. I remember when you picked it, I said, "Oh, it wasn't that great." But you said, you know, it was one of four books. I didn't think it was a strong start for Kirkman.
No.
I thought it was somewhat ambitious to try to tackle mini stories for every character, and you know that they're gonna, in a Seinfeldian kind of way,
correct,
mix in
correct.
By the third issue. They're all gonna get tied in together, but. But with the X-Men, you can't focus on that one character. You've got to write them all, so I guess you know might as well. But yeah, it did have that fun, you know, kind of X-Men feel. I really did like the Cyclops Jean Grey date.
Yeah, that was cool.
They go to the movies on a kind of a date, and Jean's kind of telepathically nudging Cyclops along to put his arm around her, then to kiss her, and finally she gets mad and yells at him, and that dialogue was really, really.
It's got a really, really sucked data telepath.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And girls are crazy enough as it is, but telepathic girls—that's too much.
Yeah, no, exactly. But I thought he did that really well, and I'm excited for Kirk because you know, to be honest, I was happy when Vaughn was on the book, but you know, it that Vaughn's run was nothing to write home about. I mean, it was good, but it wasn't amazing.
I thought it was fun. Really all. I mean, these are sort of in the.
It didn't have a lot of buzz to it. It didn't have a lot of energy to
it. That's true.
You know?
But these are also their like, you know, their side jobs. You know, the main energy is on their books.
Right. Yeah. True. But,
I thought the storyline played well to Kirkman's talents, which is sort of interpersonal relationships between characters.
Yeah. Well, given what I've read of Kirkman in Invincible and then now recently in Marvel Team Up, I'm excited to see how long this run goes, and hopefully it's going to be quality. So.
Well, that's good. What'd you get?
Yeah. Well, I didn't have a huge week, but I had a bigger week than you. I got about 10 books. In addition to Ultimate X-Men on the X-Men tip, they had the first issue of the miniseries X-Men 198, which is exploring the rest of the.
They're really going to milk this thing all the way to the bank.
They really
are,
but the thing is that this is the story. I mean, the whole Decimation House then built up to this kind of story. And it was
but how many books are there currently in the market that are directly tied into this story?
Well, all the X-Men books. I mean, that's anything with the little Decimation, little banner on it.
But
I can't even estimate. I don't know. 8.
They've got you by the horns.
There's probably more, but I'm not buying all. I'm not buying it. I only buy the books I buy.
Oh, really? You're not buying? Well, this is a new one.
No, I didn't buy. I don't buy. I mean, that's the thing with the. You know, I know everybody. I know we've come out in the past couple of podcasts being really anti-crossover, and I wouldn't say this is a crossover. This is more like No Man's Land. Did you buy all the Batman books that had to do with No Man's Land?
Probably.
Oh yeah. Well, the thing is, I buy with these kind of things. I buy the books I buy, and I try to figure it out. You know, but this miniseries, I'm curious because I'm fascinated by, and I think the real juice of the story is kind of the what happened to the different mutants around the world when the decimation event happened, and how the world is adapting to it. And you know, the X-Men are in this book, but not until like the last 5 pages. It pretty geniusly starts off with a little vignette showing Magma, who is one of the former New Mutants, and she's now a teacher for Xavier, but she's on vacation in Costa Rica, and she meets another mutant who happens to have the same powers as her, kind of flame powers, and they fall in love, and it turns out he's a volcano scientist guy, because he can go into the volcano.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah, it's clever. And so she's about to leave, and she's trying to convince him to come back to the school with her to teach there. And he says, "No, I don't want to." He goes, "Why don't you come with me and see my job, and we can do it together?" And so they're great scene, awesome visuals of them like kind of surfing in a volcano on the lava, mm-hmm. and then they're like, you know, then they're kind of touching, and flame is starting, and this whole kind of great, you know, kind of prose about, you know, the lightning strike and flame strike of love, and then all of a sudden you see him. Lose his powers and drop into the lava
Ooh.
And burn to death. And she, yeah, totally. I mean, it's all like in the first 4 pages. It's just like it's brutal.
Who's the writer?
And it is David Hein, who I'd never heard of, and I'm sure I've probably read stuff of him before. But he seems to be a go-to guy across a lot of the Marvel books because he's also writing the Son of M miniseries, the one focusing on Quicksilver, which also came out this week and was just boring because he went to the Inhumans and it was just stupid. So there was that. I also picked up DMZ by Brian Wood, the Vertigo book, which, you know, Stop the World, I bought a Vertigo book.
Too bad Josh isn't here for that one, too.
Yeah, no, exactly, yeah. Of course, it would take Brian Wood to do it, which is, he wrote it, he didn't draw it, but it's a pretty good, it's a kind of a, there's a civil war in America, and New York is the battleground, and it's about this young press intern who gets stuck in Manhattan, and interesting, you know. And then nothing else really, you know, nothing else was really amazing. I mean, Ultimate Extinction started, and I am buying it. That miniseries.
Right. Was it any good? I have to ask you because I didn't get it, and I'll explain.
Yeah, no, it actually was good. I mean, it's a build up. It's setting up the story. And it actually starts with, you know, Reed Richards and Nick Fury going over a simulation of what would happen when Galacticus attacks, from the information that they got from the Ultimate Vision.
Wasn't it like Galactus? Like,
yeah, it's GAHLAKTUS.
I wasn't gonna buy that miniseries, and then I decided, all right, I'll give it a try because I really had nothing else to buy. How often do you get a chance to branch out? So I went to a comic store this Wednesday, like normal, and I couldn't make it to my regular store. I can't remember why. I couldn't. So I went to the place across the street from my office, which people who've been to the website and heard some of the original podcasts can attest I don't like that store. That's across the street from my house, from my office. So this store racks their books alphabetically. There's no section for the new books. It's the entire store is racked from A to Z, and it's like there's like 10 racks, 5 or 6 aisles.
Yeah, they're long aisles.
And everything is there from years and years and years. So you think alphabetically racked you'd be able to find anything, except for the fact that all the Batman books are wrapped under B, all the X-Men books wrapped under X, all the Superman books under S, all the Spider-Man books under S. So if you're looking,
regardless of their actual alphabetical title.
So if you're looking for Robin, it's actually under B.
My wife would go crazy.
Yeah, so
she's a librarian, for those of you who don't know, so she would go nuts.
So I'm at a loss for where to find the Ultimate Extinction. So I go to the U's. It's not under U. I go to the E's. Not under E. I went to Ultimate Fantastic Four. I went to Ultimate X-Men. I went to all the Ultimate sections. It was nowhere to be found.
Were they just out of it?
I don't think they were just out of it. It was you know, Wednesday. They're never out of anything on Wednesday.
Yeah, it's Manhattan, yeah.
And this has happened to me in the past with this store where you can't find anything and it's under some random letter. And it annoyed me to the point where I didn't even care to ask anymore. I'd lost the interest in buying the book after looking at the fourth or fifth letter.
You see, it's almost like, I mean, it's like the comic store becomes, you know, like their own worst enemy.
And you know what? Your customers shouldn't have to search hard for your product.
Right, exactly. It shouldn't be difficult to find it, yeah.
Especially something like that. It's number one. It's an Ultimate book. It's a number one. It's written by Warren Ellis. It's a big deal. It's a crossover book.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
You shouldn't have to mine for gold, you know?
Yeah.
So that was really annoying, and I lost all interest in buying the book after that.
Well, you didn't. I mean, luckily you didn't miss, you know, the most amazing thing in the world. Although I do believe they introduced the Silver Surfer.
Well, that would make sense in the Galactus story.
But he has wings, so I don't know how that's going to play out. But so we'll see.
Are you sure it was an angel?
No, I'm positive it wasn't angel because he's silver. I mean, he's all.
Was it Archangel?
He's all naked and silvery.
Right.
There's no Archangel. It's Angel and Ultimate.
All right. Well,
X-Men. He already
so that's why I didn't get that.
Yeah.
I have one other annoyance this week. That was my minor annoyance. Although a minor annoyance that saved me $3. my other annoyance is in the DC universe now. There's this whole Infinite Crisis, Identity Crisis thing going on, taking over the entire universe, which is going to lead to the 1 year later gimmick where every book is going to fast forward in 1 year.
Yep, called 52, I believe.
Well,
right?
52 is the series that comes simultaneously, which fills in the gap between Infinite Crisis and one year later. 52 being the number of weeks between the two.
Is that how many weeks there are between?
Yeah. So, the whole fun of it is what's going to happen in the year. Who's, you know, if they're promising, you know, new heroes, different people in the costumes. Different, you know, people vastly changed from what's promised to be a very traumatic miniseries, Infinite Crisis.
Do we get to discuss the speculation/spoilers?
Well, here's my problem. It's supposed to
half
the fun is what's going to happen. You know,
I got
to buy these books to find out what's changed. Meanwhile, every other day there's somebody at Newsarama being interviewed, revealing everything.
Well, hasn't Rich Johnson already revealed everything?
Well, he whites it out. You don't have to. But the whole, I mean, they interviewed Kurt Busiek and Jeff Johns with Superman. They interviewed Kurt Busiek about Aquaman, Gail Simone about the Birds of Prey. It's like, why have the gimmick at all if you're just going to go out and just reveal, you know, not everything, but enough where it's like, oh, well, now I know that's going to happen.
Right. Yeah, you're losing the surprise factor. It's almost like...
At first, I was kind of hesitant about it, and then I decided, I convinced myself I could be excited about... Because it was what you mentioned last week in the future X-Men story, that half the fun is seeing how the characters have changed in the future.
Right,
so I thought, I'd look forward to that moment. And now, why bother? I can just go over and read the interviews on their website.
May I take this opportunity to play devil's advocate?
Sure, go ahead.
You didn't have to go to the site.
Well, no.
You don't have to read the article. You know, like if you don't want to know.
And I didn't.
I believe that we have successfully. I know personally, we have successfully been able to do a media blackout around these sort of events, i.e., the Star Wars movies, when both you and I ceased reading or looking at anything until the movie opened.
And that's true. And I have stopped since reading one or two of those interviews and ruining a couple of the books. And I didn't read the Superman article. I didn't read the Birds of Prey article.
Right,
but. My question is from a marketing business standpoint, why do that?
Right, and
I understand you want to generate buzz for the books, and you want to.
Yeah, I mean it's a PR thing. You don't want people to know what they're looking.
But if half the fun is the surprise of everything, then
right,
why?
Yeah, no, I agree.
And also, I thought, all right, once, okay, twice, fine, but now it's like five or six interviews every. They're popping up one a week.
Right. Well, here's a question for you. And any of the spoilers or these PR things you've read, is there anything about Green Lantern getting any better? Are there still sharks?
Sadly, no.
Big-headed guys.
That'd be a welcome spoiler.
Yeah, that'd be. You know, we're gonna make Green Lantern better.
It's gonna be readable.
Yeah.
Well, no, because. Actually, that would be a good one because that would actually convince me to pick it up because there's at this point nothing. Right. Nothing will
come. This week on an aside, this week marks the first week that I've actually started dropping titles in a long time.
You haven't done that in years.
No, I dropped I dropped Green Arrow, which a little upset me because I like the Ollie Queen.
Right.
I like him. But it's just been awful. I didn't drop, but I'm this close to dropping JLA. And I'm sticking with it for the same reason why I've stuck with Uncanny and Uncanny X-Men and stuff like that, because you know I've been reading this volume of JLA since Morrison started,
right?
And I feel as if that's like the main book of if you read any DC book, you probably should read JLA.
It's been terrible.
It's just been, and Bob Harris is writing it. It's just awful. And I dropped another. And I dropped Ghost Rider because it just makes no sense.
Why even get in the first place?
Because I got a little soft spot for Ghost Rider.
I've
always liked Ghost Rider.
Unusual trait. I would agree with you that JLA's are awful. Green Lantern has been. Yeah. I mean, Green Arrow has been.
I don't know if I can drop Green Lantern. I mean, like the thing is that
just
like
drop
in.
It.
I know. But like in the like honestly the gateway drug for me in the DC universe was Green Lantern. I started reading Green Lantern when Hal went crazy and Kyle became the new Green Lantern. That's what got me into DC.
Right.
And from there I found the Flash and then from there I found JLA and from there I found, you know, the stuff that I do read.
I'm holding on tight to a lot of the books simply that are not up to par simply because I'm waiting for the 1 year later thing to happen. But some of the books have been so awful that I've had to drop, like Green Lantern. That was just I couldn't. I wholly on the Green Arrow simply because of I'm waiting.
Yeah.
And I've always liked Green Arrow. My problem with Green Arrow, I actually did have a problem with Green Arrow this week, is he's been fighting Dr. Light.
Yeah.
And we all know from people who read comics know from the Identity Crisis that they turned Dr. Light into a really mean. Evil character, rapist, about as despicable as you can get. My problem is every other line of dialogue is about him, he's going to rape somebody.
Yeah.
It's like no one needs to be constantly reminded that rape is bad.
it's kind of a given.
And it sort of loses its danger if it's constantly said.
Right.
She's always saying, well, I've got to go find the helpless woman. It's like you...
Yep, where's that Sue Dibney? I'd rape her again.
Right. It's much more chilling if he drops it once instead of four times an issue.
Right.
It's just overdoing it. He's not scary like that. I mean, it just becomes cartoonish. I mean, he was generally disturbing for a while, and now he's just a cartoonish rapist, which is you know, disturbing in and of itself, but dumb.
Can you believe there was a time when I never bought any DC books ever?
Yes, I can.
Like I was staunchly against DC, like in like middle school.
Well, that's what they like fostered back then. Was you had to be one or the other. You couldn't do both.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I honestly could not believe. I couldn't even fathom reading Batman or Superman or anything like that, and it honestly took me reading like a Wizard about what was going on in Green Lantern and how I'm like, oh, that sounds pretty cool, so I picked it up.
Well, that's pretty recent if you're waiting until the Kyle Rayner years to start buying.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was late 90s.
That's...
Yeah, and then I just dove right in.
Well, aren't you a better person now for it?
Yeah, no, I think I am. There have been some good stories.
It's better to be well-rounded, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So speaking of well-rounded, we got some listener emails this week.
That's good. What do we got?
If you listen to the podcast and you enjoy the podcast and you want to interact with us, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. And we got a bunch of listener emails this week, but we don't have time to do all of them. So this week's listener email that we picked comes from Michael, who has been very active on the site this week. So we wanted to thank Michael for that. If you go to ifanboy.com, you can comment
and join in
and participate with the other readers and the other people who like to talk about comics.
And perhaps you will be rewarded just as Michael is being rewarded now.
Yes, with this recognition on the podcast for hundreds of people to hear. Anyway, Michael sent a bunch of questions, and unfortunately, Michael, we can't get to them all. But we picked out the couple ones that we thought we could answer the best. So, you know, Michael wrote us just letting us that he enjoys the site and has had a great time, commenting and reading what we write. He wants to know, speaking of Kirkman, if Kirkman were to work for DC, what books do we think he'd be best utilized on? Which I thought was a tough question.
It is tough. I mean, it's hard to say who would be good at writing what.
Right. The first thing that jumped to mind, though, is because the most I've read of Kirkman was Invincible, but I'd like to see Kirkman on Teen Titans.
He would be really good at Teen Titans.
Yeah, I think
he really writes a good teenager. Not cliched, and not overly serious. Doesn't come off as a young. A lot of teenagers and kids in comics come off as just miniature adults.
Right.
And not just because usually they're drawn that way, but he would be good. Also, Green Lantern, I think. Two reasons. One, almost anybody would be better on Green Lantern right now. As much as I love Geoff Johns, I really do like him. His writing is just terrible. But Invincible kind of has that Green Lantern-ish kind of feel to it.
Yeah,
cosmic adventures, heroes, aliens.
Right.
It's personal stories. I think he'd be really good. Green Lantern. Teen Titans is a good call, though. I didn't think of that one.
Yeah, well, in reality, if he ever went to work for DC, he'd probably take some challenging book like Dr. Fate. Or something just like
that. Hey, I like Dr. Fate.
Dr. Fate is weird.
Oh, my favorite superpowers toys is Dr. Fate.
Well, he's got a lot going for him then. All right, he had two questions that actually I was happy to see. First one is, do we think that the formerly known as the Justice League and the I Can't Believe It's Not the Justice League series by Keith Giffen and J.M.D. Matias and Kevin Maguire, do we believe those are in continuity?
No.
And he also wanted to know if we think the Superman/Batman books fit in continuity time-wise. And I love talking continuity.
Where do they fit time-wise?
Yeah, where do they fit? Where do they think they fit time-wise? So answer the first question.
No.
The formerly known as, and I can't believe it's not the Justice League. No, they're not in continuity. Why not?
Well, that's
they don't have Elseworlds on the title.
Yes, but the conceit with Justice League has always been that it's not really in continuity.
Now, let's define what you mean by in continuity. Like, it's happening right now, or that it can fit somewhere within the continuity of the character's history?
Both.
Okay, because I definitely don't think it fits in continuity now, because...
Obviously, Sue Dibney, it's not.
Yes, the whole Sue Dibney problem and Dan DiDio trying to erase everything Keith Giffen's ever done out of DC.
Well, that's just a rumor.
I know. But... But I think I could believe that they fit somewhere.
Look, you can shoehorn anything in if you try hard enough. But
yeah. I mean, it happens between these two issues.
All through the run that Keith Giffen did of Justice League in the 80s, he basically had all these heroes living in this building in Manhattan,
right?
24/7. So you can't.
How are they in their own books?
You can't. I mean, yes, officially they are in continuity. They're not Elseworlds books, and you'd have crossovers with the old ones, like Millennium and things like that would crossover, things that were happening in other books. But in reality, I mean, if you read the books, they live together.
Right.
That's just not, doesn't work, story-wise. So in my head, everything's in continuity, to be honest with you, but, reality, story-wise, they really can't be, but I guess since they're not completely Elseworlds, I would say no.
I say yes.
Also because the tone is so different. The characterization is just slightly different.
So what? I mean, that's more of a writer thing than a characterization thing. Not every writer is emulating what the other writer wrote, how they wrote the character,
Right, but like Batman is not the same Batman in Justice League books as he was in his regular.
He's
books,
not. No. Well, I didn't read that. I didn't read that entire run, and he wasn't in these two miniseries.
A little more lighthearted.
Oh, well, I thought he was pretty badass in the one I read. Yeah, I mean, he punched Guy in the face. He told him to sit down. He was very quiet. He was. I don't know.
Oh, I love that book.
That book, I honestly, I mean, and it was funny because I picked up Formerly Known As in trade.
The thing about that is those new ones he's done are nowhere near as good as the old ones.
Yeah, so I picked it up based on Connor's recommendation, and then I was looking for the old Justice League trade paperback, and it was really, it's not in print anymore, it's really hard to find, and then, oddly enough, when we were in Boston for Josh's
randomly
wedding,
found it at Newbury Comics. We were
in Newbury Comics, I turned around, and it was right there, kind of like the guy, like, it's here, I bought it, and actually, if you go to our Frapper map, and the picture of me is me reading that book in the hotel room.
Yeah.
So, with the hole in my sock, which is now becoming legendary. So, anyway.
No, that's one of the all-time great books, but, yes, it's in continuity, but no, it's not in continuity. That's my answer.
Yeah. All right, so now, where do we think Superman Batman fits in continuity?
Same problem.
I will first say that I have no idea because I don't read Superman or Batman. But
that one's not as tricky because it's not like Superman and Batman constantly hanging out together. It's just that they meet up and then they have an adventure.
Although I would like to note that it is referenced many times in the Captain Atom series, so obviously it is a continuity.
It totally is. This book is not the problem that Justice League, formerly known as Justice League, has. It's the stories are more tied in. The first arc was about Luther president.
Was the president, yeah.
So,
and in fact, it affected continuity because
when they went into the White House. It's those books definitely in continuity. Where do they fit? You know, they fit in between the raindrops. You know, they're in their middle.
Nice. I like that. That's a good term. That's a good word. All right. He has some more questions. Couple more. He hears us talk about Why the Last Man a lot, which he's read, and we encourage you all else to read. But he wants to know if we've read Fables and if we like it.
I have not.
Fables is a Vertigo book, I believe, right, out of DC?
Yes.
I have not.
I have not read it either.
I've seen it, and in fact, a girl I work with reads it and loves it. So that's all I got to say about that.
I've always been curious about it, but, you know. I've been curious about a lot of books. So much time in the day and dollars in my wallet. So.
Well, I pretty much have a staunch no Vertigo policy. So
except for the Vertigo book you bought today. Should we discuss how irrational your no Vertigo policy is, or wait till Josh gets back so he can really tear into you?
Yeah, let's tease it for another podcast. We'll talk about my Vertigo thing. So, I mean, even though I do like The Cure, but I don't like Vertigo.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the last question is, he wants to know what our favorite Elseworlds books are and what our favorite What If stories are.
Well, Elseworlds, you want to go through the big ones. You've got, you know, Kingdom Come and Dark Knight Returns. We'll put those aside because that's sort of a given.
Yeah, those are just givens, yeah. If you haven't read those, then why are you listening to this podcast? Stop listening and go buy them.
Elseworlds... The funny thing about Elseworlds is it sort of turned into like a Batman conceit because, you know, everybody wants Batman in a different scenario. Everybody seems to want to write a Batman story. Somebody once said that every writer has one Batman story in them. But
I think that was Rucka.
Probably. Yeah. But one of my favorite all time, I'm actually looking at it right now on my shelf, is I've lost it. It's the Batman one where he's back in. It's what if basically it's a world where U.S. didn't win the Revolutionary War, and England stayed in control.
Yeah,
and it was written by Alan Grant and drawn by Norm Breyfogel, and I can't find it anymore.
Norm Breyfogel is one of your all-time favorite artists.
He is my all-time favorite Batman artist,
and he probably has no idea.
Well, now he knows.
Norm, if you're listening, Connor loves you.
I do love him. If I was in charge, I'd give him a Batman book right now. But it was called, somebody can write it and tell us what it was called, or I can look it up after the podcast. But it was really great. It features a whole bunch of the DC characters. Superman, Flash, Aquaman, they're all in there. And it was really, really just, you know, good read. That was probably my favorite all-time non-big gun Elseworlds book.
Yeah. Mine was... Probably, and it's more recent. I don't read as many Elseworlds as you do because I'm not a DC guy, but I did pick up I was flying to New Orleans, actually, before all the unpleasantness there.
Right.
And whenever I take a plane trip, I'd go pick up a trade paperback.
Batman Holy Grail.
Okay, thank you. Batman Holy Grail.
And it's not Alan Grant. But anyway, sorry. I just found it.
Who was it?
it's Brennett.
Don't mind me. I'm just doing my part.
Looking through my stack, and I found it. Brennert. Some guy I've never heard of, but he was good, and Breyfogle did the art, and that was really good. I'd lend this to you.
Can't go wrong with Breyfogle.
You should read this. Go ahead.
Anyway, so my favorite Elseworlds recently probably is the Superman Red Sun.
That was really good.
Which is what if Superman was raised in Russia as opposed to Kansas, which was a great read. Yeah, well, what if. Well, speaking of what if, you want to know what our favorite what if story is?
You go first since it's a Marvel thing.
Well, yeah, it's tough. I mean, I have a hard time pinning it down to one. My background what if is I love...
We should say
the,
what if is probably one... We love what if.
What if was one of the best things about Marvel.
Yeah, it was.
Ever. Honestly, ever. And, like, they had one series...
Not the
from
new
19...
ones, the well,
yeah,
classic
well, they had the first series ran from 1977 to 1984. I haven't read as much from that series.
Right.
But I'm looking at a list of all the issues from that, and it looks just as good. Then they did a second series from 89 to 98, which really is a misnomer because halfway through that series it started sucking.
Right.
And then it went away, and then they just recently started doing those events, which really last year's event was pretty good. Like, what if Karen Page had lived?
Were good, yes.
And what if Professor X and Magneto formed the X-Men together? Or what if Aunt May died, said Uncle Ben? But this year's one was awful.
Yeah, it felt like a betrayal.
But back to the original question, my favorite What If stories were probably the ones from the second volume, in and around the 1989, 1990, 1991. And part of the reason was is that back then I was rabid for comics and I bought back issues, and my comic book store at the time happened to had a 50-cent bin, and it was filled with What Ifs. And so one day I binged on What Ifs, and I got What If the X-Men Lost Inferno, what if the Punisher's family hadn't been killed? What if the X-Men stayed in Asgard? Asgard. What if Professor X had become the Juggernaut? What if Daredevil killed Kingpin? Like, these great stories that were just awesome.
I think we talked about this in another podcast, didn't we? What ifs?
Probably.
That was the great thing about the original What Ifs was that there was always a tweak to the original story. Yep. It was always a different, someone makes a different decision or events play out differently. Not like the new series where it's just, let's stick Wolverine in Chicago. Yeah. The new series are almost more like Elseworlds than What Ifs. But my favorite, I only remember a few of them, but my favorite off the top of my head was What If Captain America Had Become President.
Yeah, that was the first series, I think. That wasn't the second series.
That's probably my all-time favorite What If. Captain America was my favorite Marvel character, but...
One of my favorite ones was actually What If the All New All Different X-Men Had Never Existed, and that, oddly enough, was written by Kurt Busiek before he had any sort of fame.
Yeah, I also remember What If Spider-Man had stopped the burglar.
Yes, yeah, that's
that was
a good one
too. And wasn't there What If the X-Men had something with the Revolutionary War, lost the Evolutionary War or something like that?
Oh yeah, they did all. They basically, what's cool is that they used it to look at their crossovers. Like, what if the Marvel superheroes lost the Atlantis attacks?
Right.
That one. I think that's the one you're talking about. Yeah.
The two I remember the most are the Captain America and Spider-Man ones, but I remember loving all of them. I just off the top of my head, probably a Hulk one in there, but still, those are great series.
Yeah, great series, and I mean, and last year was cool, but this year was not so good.
Ugh, this year was. It's like seeing an ex-girlfriend.
I'm looking at a list of the former issues, and I see a whole bunch written by Ben Robb, who is a writer I hate because he ruined Excalibur. Anyway, all right, I don't want to get hung up on Ben Robb.
We could be here all night.
Yeah, I could be here all night talking about Ben Robb. Anyway, so those are Michael's questions. So if you have any questions for us,
any comments you want to tell us we're terrible,
anything? Yeah, tell us we're bad. Tell us we're good.
Tell us we're pretty.
Yeah, write us at contact@ifanboy.com.
What, you don't want to be called pretty?
Okay, let's not get weird. All right, so that wraps up another podcast.
We survived without Josh.
We did. We were able to make it without Josh. I think we did a pretty good job.
I hope so.
So you can visit us at ifanboy.com, where you can read the latest comics news and commentary.
We had a lot of really good discussion this week about all
kinds of
topics.
Yeah, the past couple weeks have been great, and you can actually, if you do come to the site, please visit our Frapper map, which there's a link in the upper right-hand corner on the site, or you can go to www.frapper.com/ifanboy and stick a little pushpin in, tell us where you're from. Well, we've had a lot of great response to that. We've got about 16 people on our map.
We're international.
We've got some representing from the UK as well as Puerto Rico. And we've pretty much drawn a line in the sand in the United States.
Yeah, we own the Mississippi River region.
Yeah, basically anything from the Mississippi East is iFanboy territory, or L.A. So if you happen to be in Montana,
we'd love
and
to
you like us,
Seattle, or
yeah, exactly.
Or the
Texas would be nice. Yeah, Colorado,
Nebraska, anywhere.
Yeah,
you know, west of the Mississippi River would be cool.
Yeah, exactly, because we've got that whole Chicago to Florida line drawn. So
it's almost a straight line.
Yeah, it's very odd. But so thank you everybody who's put a pushpin in there, and we hope we'll add some more over the next couple of days and weeks. So yeah, and like we said, you know, ifanboy.com, contact at ifanboy.com to email us, frapper.com/ifanboy.
See you next week. I'm almost completely done with the show.
Hey.
Yeah,
I don't want this to become between us. This is the kind of thing that can drive a wedge.
I can barely stand it now.
Hey. I don't want to hear that talk out of you.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.